Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're definitely going to talk about Fall Guy. Neither one of us saw something Planet of the Apes. Although the reviews are fucking like phenomenal, man.
Yes.
They're like, this is the best one. I'm like, I don't think I saw the last one.
Our buddy Spencer got the beat on us, and he actually went to go see it before either one of us did. We're usually
well, he's
dad
two
mode.
Kids, yeah. So yeah. He's not usually they've been on a like a streak of going to see movies. I don't know if it's just that Ezra is more like down to just go see whatever now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't have to really get into it, but I went and saw the 25th anniversary, which is still playing. So if you can go, yeah. Go. Phantom Menace celebrating its 25th anniversary this month. And it's back in theaters and was second place in the box office a couple of weeks ago. Like,
yeah.
That's pretty... It's damning, but also kind of cool.
Well, it's like, you know what it does? It tells me, like, so I haven't watched I haven't watched The Bad Batch yet. I haven't watched the season finale, the series finale yet. I'm hovering, man, because I've been slow rolling that one, so I haven't been going in. There's a point to this, which is that what I feel like the Phantom Menace thing tells us, which is really funny, is that the kids that loved Phantom Menace, the ones, not us, not our gen, who fucking shit on that movie so hard after it got released when they thought that it was fool's gold, but like the kids, the little kids, the three 3 to 10 year olds, 25 years later, they know what they know what the Phantom Menace is for them, right?
Yeah.
And they're the ones that made this thing huge, like opened surprisingly. I guarantee you Disney was like, I don't know, man, I don't think it's gonna open up that much. And then to open up second place with little to no, like, I didn't see it. Wasn't like do you remember in 97, like how much advertising there was,
like Star Wars, motherfucker, like,
yeah,
everywhere.
Like, it was literally like it was literally like we were back. It was like, we're back, baby, we are back. Yeah. In a big fucking way. Yeah. And it's there was nothing, there were movie posters, but this fucking movie still makes almost $10 million, and it's because the Phantom Menace kids, like, I call them the Phantom Menace kids.
It almost got its hooks back into me. I was at Walmart yesterday. I did spend way too much money on Blu-rays yesterday. Nothing too great. But I bought the Obi-Wan set. I bought Andor season one. Those are $45 a piece. I also picked up Moon Knight. What was the other one they released? I feel already had no WandaVision's been out. I had that. What was another recent Marvel thing?
Oh yeah, I know. I just cannot remember for the life of me. Captain Winter Soldier. Or no. I'm sorry. Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yeah. Which, can we talk, like, just a little side note? Isn't it hilarious that the Happy Meals are fucking out right now? Because the movie is supposed to be out, but it's not going to be out for, what, another year? which I love, because, like, let's just...
McDonald's was just like, nope, it's on our slate. That's what we're doing.
Well, that's what happens when you shift on McDonald's. Because the McDonald's train does not, like, they schedule those things, like, 5 to 7 years in advance. Yeah. That's like, to me, that's nuts. Like that Disney just went, okay, let's just put a stamp right here. And I'm like, ah, fuck it. Let's just go. Let's roll with it. Let's. I don't even know if there's spoilers with the little Happy Meal toys.
Like, yeah, me either. I saw the blurb about it, and I was like, oh, well, that sucks. What I was saying, Phantom Menace almost got its hooks back into me because I'm at Walmart, and one of the center aisles has, they have that, like, I don't, it's not called Black Series, but I call it the Black Series Lego sets.
Yes, the ones Star that have Wars. The little, yeah, the little dioramas, right?
Yes.
The ones that are like, yeah, let's do, like, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking
they
about.
They had the pod race. It's Anakin and Sebulba's nice. Pods. And I was like, yeah. I really want that. Because I, like, a week ago, I saw the movie, and it's been on my mind. Like, there's a lot of problems with that movie, but I was arguing with this dude at work who was just shitting all over it. And I was like, mm-hmm. look, man, I don't disagree that the film has a lot of narrative problems, and also it's supposed to be a kid's movie, and there's a lot of talk about taxation and trade routes, and that's fucking dumb. Like, as an adult, I better understand it. And I'm like, yeah, this is fucked up. Like, as a teenager, I was like, what the fuck are they talking about? But that movie looks incredible.
Yeah.
Ant-Man Quantumania came out a year and change ago. The Phantom Menace looks 100,000 times better than that movie.
Like, yes, it does.
It's just, it sucks that so much of it is bogged down in the bullshit, and like he kind of got too into, like, even George Lucas went back and admitted, like, I was trying to, like, do too much, almost. Like, I wanted to mm-hmm. present the story but also give the political angle and, like, show how stuff like this could happen. And, you know, he's a little in his, like, how did Hitler come to power shit. And it just gets bogged down in all of that. You know, mm-hmm. people really want to point fingers in Jar Jar, and I get it. Or even Watu, at, you know, to a degree. Also, I yes. do get it, but those characters feel realized, real. The fucking, like, what are the Nemoidians? That's the, like, rewatching it, I was like, wait, I get the problematic angles of these other characters. Yeah. The Nemoidians are really, like, that's the real problematic thing.
Yeah.
It's so, like, tell me you grew up during World War II without telling me you grew up during World War II.
Yeah. And a racist. A little, like, systematically racist, right? Like, it's like, holy shit. What? Okay.
Yeah, the like, broken, like, it's, like, Jar Jar's broken English, and to Lucas's credit, like, mm-hmm. people will talk about the Jar Jar speak. I'm pretty sure he's on record, and that the Jar Jar speak comes from him listening to his very young children at the time talk.
Yes, like, that's exactly what he had said. And so, like, there's no, like, it's not like a Stephen Fletcher thing or an Amos and Andy thing. Like, yeah. though he grew up in that era. Like, I mean, right. we're not gonna, like, I'm, but, like, it, I don't think that it was intentional in any way, shape, or form that he did that, right? Because
the Nemoidians are fucking intentional.
Yes.
There's no way you do that without intent.
Well, you just look at their fucking design and their fucking face. Like, you, like, as a man who's a quarter Japanese, like I was like, you know what, George Lucas, you can take a long walk off a short bridge and go fuck yourself, as the Bostonians like to say, because it was just so fucking, it's so in your face. Like, from the moment that they talk, it's like, what? Wow. Not even Ming the Merciless sounded like this in the Flash Gordon series.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know that when Flash Gordon, when Flash Gordon 80 is more, is less yeah, racist than you are, there's a fucking problem.
And that, I mean, the Nemordians are Andy Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's level of, like,
yes, they are.
What the fuck are we doing here?
That sort of fuckery that you're like, what? What are you doing, man? Like, come on, dude. Like, you were like the... You were the dude that, like, you know, that quietly just basically, like, quietly stood there and just was like, Star Wars is for everybody. Go fuck yourself if it's not. But then you go ahead and you revert it back to, like, to this point. Like, this is the thing that I never understood, which was that when we were kids, most of the aliens spoke Huttese, right? And they were either subtitled or they weren't. But we understood what they were saying, right? Or androids. Like, they were speaking android, right? My thing is that, like, my biggest gripe about...
Why not just have them speak another language?
Yeah, have them all speak Huttese, because, like, it seemed like Huttese was the universal language for everybody, right? Like, that's what we kind of, like, at least in Jedi, that's what I assumed when I was a kid, was like this is the alien language, right? Yeah. And only the rich, like, you know, elite white people spoke English, which made you feel kind of weird about things. And then especially, like, the Empire, because they were all proper English. But yeah, like, it's definitely. And, like, the thing is that, like, that 4K of that 4K of The Phantom Menace, that's probably one of the most beautiful movies I've ever seen on 4K. Like, it's just gorgeous. Like, I have a friend that has a 200-inch screen in his house. It's basically a screening room. And we've gone systematically through them. And I can tell you, like, none of the other films, like, not even Clone Wars Clone Wars looks pretty, but I don't know. There's something about, like, how much time he spent trying to make this look really good, and the models that were used, because there's a lot of model work in there. It's fucking,
even though people
beautiful.
Don't people it's so weird, like, in hindsight, like, and I'm sure I was on some of these bandwagons at some point. People want to talk about the overusage of CGI, and I think some of that is a factor in, like, especially probably Attack of the Clones, because they spend a lot of time in Coruscant, and, like, it's a totally fucking digital city. Like, of course, it's a lot of green screen stuff. But, like, in Phantom, it's not. Like, it's a lot of model work. It's a lot of design work. I mean, there is some, like, added stuff, but
yeah, but a lot of set work. And you heard the reason why he went full CGI and no more partial sets, right? Like, you know the reason why he went that way. Two words: Liam Neeson. Because when he hired Liam Neeson, this fucking dude didn't realize that he was 6'4", and they made the sets all designed to be under 6 feet. And so that 4 inches literally cost him millions and millions of dollars because he had to account for it.
Gotcha.
And so afterwards he was like, no, none of this stuff. We're not building any more sets. We are literally just building the floor and then head to toeing green screen.
Yeah.
Which to which I was like, Liam Neeson pissed you off that much? Like, not just during that, but during the whole production. Like, that was, like, the final stick, like, in the mud that made you. Because, like, you know, you guys can go online and read about their back and forth. Because it's actually quite humorous. It's quite humorous to hear like to hear about the Lucas Neeson feud and what it was over and the fact that it literally took like I wonder if he had it in his contract that said, or like when he sold it, he said absolutely under no conditions is Liam Neeson going to return unless he kisses my feet. because it took a long time for him to come back. But yeah. Anywho, like back to the experience. Like, so you actually saw it in, like, did you see it in like a Dolby Vision, Dolby Atmos theater?
No, or was it like very, very, very basic, like okay. kind of just, I mean, of course it was streaming or digital, whatever they digital did with 4K, projectors. Yeah. Yeah. But, it's still like, I was just like, I can't believe how good this movie looks 25 years later, because yeah. there are a number of huge Hollywood movies, like big productions we can go to, not from the last 5 years that mm-hmm. even when they were released, we're like, it's a little sketch. But now just look like absolute dog shit. And
they really do.
Like, this movie looks perfect. It mm-hmm. looks absolutely perfect, and it's pretty amazing. But yeah, if you get a chance, to see specifically this one in theaters, I say you got to take it. Devendra Hardwar, who has definitely bashed the prequels.
Oh yeah, he has.
He talked about it on Filmcast. This week he also went and saw it, and like those guys were, you know, shitting on it. And he was like, I'm telling you, I had a good time watching this. Like I get all the problems, but and maybe it does help that we're living in the post J.J. Abrams Star Wars, which he talked about. I don't know if it's Bob Iger or I think it was Bob Iger who was there when they screened The Force Awakens for George Lucas and talked about yes. his very honest reaction to the movie, which was, there's nothing new here.
Yep.
And, like, I love that. Like, I know they were all so proud of that fucking movie, and it is enjoyable for what it is. But, like, I felt that way watching. I was like, there's nothing new here. Like, there's so much of, like, remember this, remember this, yeah. remember this, remember. And like, it's fuck, like, every George Lucas Star Wars movie was, like, here's something you haven't fucking seen before. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we spend a lot of time going back to Tatooine, and that sucks.
Pod racing, dude.
Yeah, the dual-bladed lightsaber. You get to yeah. Attack of the Clones, and like the fucking, like, just whatever it is at the end, the finale of Attack of the Clones, yeah. whatever you want to call it, the massive battle. We hadn't seen anything like that in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm. Nothing like that. Absolutely Mustafar. Nothing.
We had seen nothing like Mustafar, man.
No.
Like, it's incredible. Like, mm-hmm. every single movie, like, gives you something new. And those, like, I would honestly say the only one of those movies actually gives you something new. And it's mm-hmm. the one that people want to point to as being like, well, fuck that movie, you know? Everything else is just retreads of dumb shit that now Star Wars, you know, specifically Dave Filoni, has to make sense.
Has to do cleanup. Like, yeah. literally cleanup. Like, you're like I often sit here and I go, you guys are just creating more work, which is fine for Filoni. Like, and fine for fans that are like loving the animation end of Star Wars, which I think that we both are like huge fans of. And I mean, I know we're both fans of. And the thing is that I'm okay with it, but at the same time, it's really weird how, like, and this goes back to, like, so, like, I was watching I was watching the last two Apes movies, which were directed by Matt Reeves. And I know, like you're like, not everybody's a fan of these movies, but and I'm okay with that. The thing that's wild to me is that like people were like people like love to talk about how JJ is the world builder and all this bullshit, right? And like there are people that fucking just adore his work, and I'm like, y'all realize that he was he's not the one from Bad Robot or like the friends that became Bad Robot. That's the really talented one. It's Matt fucking Reeves.
I was just having this conversation with somebody about Fringe because I was kind of bad mouthing JJ Abrams, and she was like, "Hey, I fucking love Fringe," and I was like, "Yeah, but here's the thing, like as I get further away from Fringe." Even though these two dudes are a little like wonky in their own right, I take a look around and go, wait, was it JJ or is it just Roberto Orci and the fucking other guy?
Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orci.
Yeah, Kurtzman and Orci.
Like what Kurtzman? Okay, so Orci is the psycho, is the crackpot.
Right.
And Kurtzman is the...
Which works like, for Fringe. That yeah, works for does. Fringe.
It really does, right? It really does. Like, but also, like, what I'm going to say is Kurtzman and Jenny Lumet, who is Sidney Lumet's daughter, have taken over Star Trek, the Star Trek universe, right? In a big way.
Right.
Away from, thank God, away from Akiva Goldsmith, because I'm not a big fan. I mean, you know... All you need to do is say three words, Batman and Robin, and you understand exactly where I'm coming from. But what they have done with Star Trek is not only course correct what JJ ruined in Star Trek, but also are doing kind of what Filoni did with Star Wars, which is not just course correct it, but make it a bigger world where you're like, fuck, this is the Star Trek that I wanted. Why didn't I get this before? And the big answer is that Star Trek is designed for TV. It's never been, it's these weird things that I'm like JJ never gets the big picture of it. Other people do. Like, Mission Impossible 3 is not the movie that changes. Like, everybody wants to say, oh, yeah, JJ's Mission Impossible 3 is what changed Mission Impossible. No, it's Brad Bird coming in on... for using IMAX cameras and unlocking the whole shit of Tom Cruise wanting to do his own fucking stunts. That's what makes Mission Impossible level up. Not J.J. Abrams. Same thing with Star Trek. Star Trek 2009 is great because he was under confines. You get him outside of the confines and you get Star Trek Into Darkness.
It's also like, what if we took a Star Trek movie and made a Star Wars movie,
out of it? Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's I enjoy it, but it's because I enjoy Star Wars movies. If I was a like diehard Star Trek fan, I might be like, this is kind of some bullshit.
Yeah, some real bullshit, right? Like, I don't know, like all of it is like really nebulous, right? Like it all goes back to like, and I know like I'm sure like, okay, so like, JJ is a pilot director. Like, and I think we've said it before, but I'm going to say it again.
The Lost Pilot's fucking phenomenal.
It is, right? The Alias Pilot. The Alias Pilot made me a fan and an apologist for literally 10 years. That and Felicity, before I really understood what, like what showrunners did and how there was a difference between what JJ did and what a showrunner did. Like, JJ didn't do any of the show running on Lost. He just did the pilot, right? Like, he did the pilot, and then he came up with the idea that they're all stuck. Like, they're all, like, it's all, like, purgatory, right? And then the stupidest thing is that everybody guessed it, and then he deuced out. This is where I started, like, I really don't like JJ. Like, I don't like anything. I don't like the fact that he's not made an original movie that made him who he is. Like, he's literally the era that we live in, right? He's a copycat. He's the IP king. Like, all of his movies that are super huge hits, Star Trek, Star Wars, Rise of Skywalker.
Star Trek movies, two Star Wars movies.
Yep.
Super 8.
Which is a Spielberg splooge.
And Mission
right?
Impossible.
Like it's, yeah. And Mission Impossible. So, like, is there any original, like, there's no originality there. And even if you look at his slate of the supposed movies he's doing, they're all unoriginal. They're all like, oh, IP King again. And it's like people want to call him one of the great directors. And I'm like, nah, man, he don't get to stand with Nolan. He don't get to stand with he doesn't even get to stand with the Safdies. Like at least all of these guys have gone out on their own and done like, you know, either forcefully done their own original content or when they were a part of an IP, they put their stamp on it so hard that literally it changed it. I think that JJ thinks of himself as Nolan, right? But here's the difference between him and Nolan is Nolan like put his stamp on things and left it so hard that we're having trouble adjusting from like we had DC and Warner's had such a hard time pivoting away that they chose somebody who they thought was kind of like Nolan, but it was all the bad stuff about Nolan, right? Like Snyder, like it was so tough for them to get out under the style of what Nolan did that they had to basically completely reboot it. That's a dude that's a stylist, right? That's a filmmaker. Like George Lucas, for better or for worse, was a filmmaker that put a fucking stamp on Star Wars, right? So much so that nobody can do Star Wars other than the guys that he trained, which are the effects guys and Dave Filoni. It's just weird. Like, I know I went off on a JJ tangent, and I dislike JJ a lot, and everybody kind of knows that. But it's at the same time, it's like, I don't like...
I mean, we're in a post-JJ Star Wars world. And my point basically was that it's when all you had was the original three films, it's probably a lot easier to shit on The Phantom Menace. Even when you just have those six films, like, it's kind of easier to just shit on the prequels. When you get into the post-JJ Star Wars, it's like, I don't know, man. There's at least some substance there. There's a lot of silliness and a lot of, like, head-scratching, what are we doing? But, like, there is some substance there. And JJ's two Star Wars movies, like, you kill off Han Solo because that's what Harrison Ford wants. That's it. Like, a lot of people want to gripe about that. He's been wanting Han Solo to die since The Empire Strikes Back. So, like, if there was only one way that story was ever going to end, if Harrison Ford was coming back. So, like, I have no really, like, blame to point at anybody except Harrison hates that character. He's dead now. So, but everything else, like, it's just all so fucking, like, just, like you said, unoriginal. It's just doing somebody else's shit and I guess thinking you can do it better, but it's not better.
It's not.
One more Star Wars thing, since we're on Dave Filoni. Okay. We were briefly talking about Dave Filoni.
Mm-hmm.
Did you watch Tales of the Empire?
I have not. Like, that's actually one of the birthday things that I'm going to be doing. So I'm super excited because it's all like it's getting me prepped for The Acolyte, it feels like, because it's all the Sith stuff, the Sith-centric stuff.
Somewhat.
So, oh, okay.
It's two stories. Mm-hmm. There's six episodes, three-part stories.
Oh, nice.
Start with the second three, because they don't lead into each other.
Oh, okay.
I was a little kind of sort of spoilers. The first three is basically the origin of Morgan Elsbeth from.
Oh, okay. from the new Star Wars world.
Yes.
Or from Filoni. It's so weird to say because it's not in the future. It's in the past because we're dealing with like post-Vietnam, like, or post, like, you know, post-Empire bullshit, which is infinitely interesting to me. But like, you know, but yeah, okay. That's, ooh, I like that. Like, so
I thought I was going to like it. That's the first three. I got really bored with it really quick. The first episode is really good.
Okay.
Halfway through the second episode, I was like, wait, I don't think I like this character. I don't think I'm interested in it. You might really enjoy it. The second set of three episodes, I am going to tell you nothing about. It's fucking incredible.
Okay. All right.
It is something new. It is something fucking new. Like,
good.
Along with like dashes of the old stuff, I really, really enjoyed the second set of three episodes. I would watch them in reverse order.
I will definitely take your advice on that, and then I will report back in regards to that and the Bad Batch, because I know that like we are the corner of Star Wars that are like, fuck JJ, but Dave Filoni is God, but he kind of is. I mean, like, let's be honest and then Bad Batch is.
I'm not going to say how many episodes do you have left? Just the finale?
I have two more before that. So I have three. I have a 90-minute movie.
Waiting for me.
The
finale brings the show around to a plot thread from years ago that just made me so fucking happy. I was just like, holy shit, this is amazing that you have tied this up. Like, he's the king, man. Like,
he is.
I think he does Star, like, I don't even think, I'm just gonna say, he does Star Wars better than Lucas does Star Wars.
let's be honest. Like, after the Clone Wars ended, like, when we got our final season of Clone Wars, and we could look at the breadth of the storytelling and how much he picked up Lucas's shit, which was the intention, right? Lucas was like, I just don't have time. Like, here's the difference between JJ and
I'm an old man.
Lucas.
I can't do this forever.
Exactly, is that, like, Lucas's has an intent, like, whenever there's a loose plot thread, there is literally, in his mind, and probably written on paper, some outline to that particular plot thread and its completion. JJ just likes to, like, dangle things out there and just leave them. Like, he doesn't have any idea of how the Knights of Ren are going to work. He just wants the Knights of Ren.
To your fucking point, one of the things that people just latched on to Phantom Menace and were like, why the fuck is this in here? The midichlorians. Like, what is this? This is bullshit. Here we are 25 years later. The fact that you can quantify somebody's ability to wield the Force is very fucking important to Star Wars.
Yes, it really is. And in the post-Jedi era that we're not only just Revenge of the Sith era, where the Empire is building into where it is, stuff like Andor, stuff like the Bad Batch, where they're talking about, and here's the best part, from 40 years, from the best I could do, anywhere between 40 to 60 years before The Last Jedi, The Rise of Skywalker, where JJ literally fucked everybody, where he just decides to put in, the Emperor lives! ! And the work that they've had to do to justify this? Wow. Like, that's JJ, that's Dave's real genius.
The fact that you can quantify that,
Yes.
Then becomes important to, like, solve the problem of how did the Emperor clone himself?
Exactly.
Maintain those force powers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And here we have the Bad Batch, like, and the Mandalorian, like, using those specific things. The M count. Which makes me wonder, like, are they avoiding saying midichlorians because it's like a trigger word for some subset of fucking Star Wars fans?
Absolutely know that. You absolutely know that. Like, it's an M count. So yeah. Like, because those guys are so stupid that they'd be like, what is an M count?
Huh. I don't know, man. JJ but told us the dice.
It's important that you can identify that so that you can bridge that gap. Like, part of me wonders, like, so yes, JJ kind of fucked everything up. Is the Emperor returning the bad thing? No, I actually think that was in George's plan from the jump, because he had Ian McDiarmid says that they had had conversations before he sold Star Wars to Disney. I think that was part of the plan, because George liked the clone thing. Like,
oh, he loves the clone thing. I mean, obviously. I mean,
so that was in the works. I just don't think he would have half-assed it in the way that he did. So I don't, it's not even that I blame JJ for, like, oh, Palpatine returned. It's the fucking half-assed way that everything happened. Like,
yes.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting, like you said, that he wrote something down in a notebook and put it in a movie, and, like, people didn't like it, but, like, there was a thought to why that has to exist.
Well, yeah, and also, like, from what I understood, the art trilogy was, like, makes the from what I understood, like, the rumor was that part of the Arnt's trilogy arc, the new trilogy arc, was the reveal that the Clone Wars and everything that Palpatine was doing was to ensure that he had the tools necessary to be able to clone himself to live forever.
Right.
Like, that's what the whole Clone Wars was R&D research into how to actually properly clone somebody so that you have a perfect clone. And, like, all of it was supposed to be justified in a big way. That's a reveal that the Clone Wars was basically R&D for a madman, which makes sense because, you know, and then the further story of, you know, Darth Pelagius the Wise is that he took it to his grave, and Palpatine did not know. Darth Sidious didn't know how to, that was the joke, right? Was that the thing that his master did was leave him in the lurch on how to actually revive yourself and live forever. And, you know, like, it creates a context that makes the Emperor's arc so wild and so kind of, like, weirdly sinister to every single person. It's literally Nixon 2.0, right? Like, like Lucas grew up, like, you know, in the 60s, protest hating Nixon. This is literally Nixon, from the hunched back to the way that he kind of talks. Think about it. He's fucking Nixon.
It's Nixon if Nixon became Hitler, right?
Yes. You exactly. Know?
Lucas has a, like, absolute fascination with World War II. So, like, it's interesting to see. And you know, I've shit on George before, and I'll just say it here. No, George Lucas also stole a lot of shit whole cloth from fucking Frank Herbert. Like, the more I learn about Dune, the more I'm just like, fuck. Like, he was just like, I'll take this and this and this and this. So it's not even that Lucas is super original. It's just, it's also not half-assed. Like, Yes, are you stealing from other people? Yes, artists steal. They do. But you're also create like using it to create something else and not just being like, I'm going to borrow your toys, play with them. Here, you can have them back. I'm sorry I broke them. Like, you know, like, what the
That's
fuck?
That's literally what he did, right? Like, it's like you have, like, on one side, you have the JJs who are like Sid from Toy Story,
mm-hmm.
who just want to burn everything down, right?
Like, I'm going to take your toys and make a new toy. Look at this. Like, that's horrendous.
Yeah, yeah, like, exactly.
Why did you break my toys to make this?
Exactly, exactly. Why did you try to make an AT-AT a flying ship? It looks terrible. Thank you for breaking my toy. Now I'm going to punch you in the fucking face. Where like, people, like, then you have the other section, which is, like, Dave and John, who are like, I like these toys. I'm going to play with them. But guess what? I'm going to bring toys from the Masters of the Universe here. I'm going to bring the toys. I'm not saying, like, they bring He-Man in, but it's like they create their own toys in the right way.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, it's borrowing with the intent to make something new and not borrowing with the intent to, like, oh, I can do it better.
Yes, exactly. Next week on shitting on J.J. Abrams and everything he does and ruining his legacy.
There's a couple of news things I wanted to ask you about.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been some casting rumor / announcement for the Fantastic Four.
Yes, two of them, right? Okay, so let's go with the one that I really like. And I'm going to say something very weird that people are going to be like, what the fuck? Ralph Ensign has probably one of the sexiest gravelly voices out there. It's an unexpected choice, but I really love it because he even looks like Galactus, right? He looks like him. Like, his face, the voice, everything kind of, for me, that works. Though, like, can I tell you something? Like, when I heard it, you know what I instantly thought? Man, he would have made a great Doctor Doom.
Yeah.
But I really like that choice as the voice.
You can't watch it, but he's in a show that was on Disney Plus called Willow that wasn't super great. But no. He was kind of fun in it, so.
he really was, wasn't he?
I like it. Like, I like not going with, like, an immediate, I don't want to say recognizable voice, but, like, he can do the voice, and it's, you're not going to be sitting in your seat going, like, hey, that's whoever. Like, it's the guy doing the voice, you know? Like, it's hard for me, going back to Phantom Menace very briefly, it's hard for me to watch Phantom Menace now, and when Darth Maul speaks, not be like, oh, hey, that's, what's his name? From Guardians of the Galaxy, and, you know, British dude. I'm drawing a blank on his freaking name, man.
Now you're making me forget about him. Jesus Christ, I can't even remember his name. But I know who you're talking about. It will come to me in like 2 seconds. But no. It is an inobvious choice, right? Like, it's not... It's not like James Earl Jones, right? Like, it's not somebody... It's not an obvious choice where you hear it, you hear the voice and you go... Well, I mean, to guys like us who've deep dived into other, like, you know, like we're just film nerds and we know these things, like, it's going to be like, oh, okay, like, you know, Ralph Ensign, I know who that is. To other guys, they're going to be like, who? Well, he was kind of on Game of Thrones sometimes. Oh, okay. Well, was he Ned? No, he wasn't Ned. Like, he was just a side character. Oh, okay. Well, why did they pick him? And it's like, you just don't get the point. Shut the fuck up.
Peter Serafinowicz.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
That's is the voice of Darth Maul. But, yeah, like, at the time, at the time, he had done nothing. So, And even now, he hasn't done enough that people are like, oh, that's Peter Serafinowicz, because most people don't know who that is. So I like the idea of going like that. It is a George Lucas level of like, I'm going to cast a voice. I'm not going to cast that guy as the voice. Like James Earl Jones, when he was cast as Vader, was not James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones. So, no, he wasn't.
You know,
he's like, you know, it makes sense. Like, okay, so like Marvel, like, okay, so like for me, it feels like, and correct me if I'm wrong, or like, but does it feel like they're getting their swag back with like
a little bit, man? Like, so the other is not completely confirmed. Yes. I think at this point, it's mostly just like probably true rumor. Mm-hmm. John Malkovich in the Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, man. Okay. So you and I are probably thinking the same thing because we grew up with Malkovich. So I'm going to say something. I just recently
Pay that watched... man is money.
I just watched probably his greatest villain role in The Line of Fire. Like, I just recently rewatched it for just shits and giggles because I wanted to watch like a 90s throwback thriller action movie that like has a deep cast and was well written but kind of junky, and it fit the bill. And so, but what I forgot was just how fucking amazing John Malkovich is in that movie, because he's so unhinged and he gets to do exactly what he loves to do: wear wigs, be a weirdo, like blow job a gun. Like, it's just weird ass shit. Like, but it all works because he's so fucking menacing. Like, adding John Malkovich to the world is kind of like adding Benicio del Toro into the world, right? Like, you don't know what you're gonna get, but
yeah, like, oh god, Benicio's gonna be in Guardians, and then you see him in Guardians, and it's like, yeah, I don't know what I expected, but like, I should have expected that, because holy shit, that's weird.
Yes, exactly, right? Like, but when Malkovich is like given purpose and he's reined in, I mean, there is very few that are there as like elliptically dangerous as him. Do we think?
I'm gonna hit you with something.
Okay,
I want to think what everybody else thinks. I do.
Yes, I do too.
Malkovich's doom would be phenomenal, but also, right? Also, Malkovich is also not against playing for fun. Like, he does like to do the serious, meaty, like, chew the scenery thing. He's also down to just have fun. So, John Malkovich as the Mole Man,
oh my fucking
would be
God,
so
dude.
Much fun that
it really would.
I'm just fucking here for it. He gets to be weird. He gets to be creepy. He just, you know, gets to have fun. So,
and he gets to wear a wig.
Yeah.
He gets to wear
Malkovich.
Oh my God.
As the Mole Man, I think is an interesting swerve. He won't have a lot of screen time. It'll be 15 minutes of the movie.
Well, it'll be the,
but like, it'll be like, a it'll lot almost, of fun.
Yeah. It'll literally be like almost like a, I wonder if they're going to go with a non-origin movie and just start us in the middle and do like a James Bondian, like basically still from The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Like where they had the Mole Man and like just have this giant action scene at the beginning and just throw us into it. Like, right? Yeah. Like
and
so
then
that
you
there's
take
no...
two steps back and go, here's how we got here.
Yes, exactly. But then you have Malkovich doing a weird ass accent, doing a fucking, like, just doing everything that you would expect him to do.
It's Paul Giamatti level of like,
exactly,
hey, do you want to come do this? Like, sure, that sounds fun. Like, because Giamatti's very similar in that he likes to do like meaty, important shit, whether it's in a big blockbuster movie or some small indie movie, he likes to sink his teeth into stuff, but he also likes to have fun. So
absolutely.
You know, like, this is a way for Malkovich not to be committed to anything long term.
Mm-hmm.
And also get to be in a movie that his grandkids or whoever can go see, you know?
Yep.
Well, because, frankly, he's not in a lot of movies like that. So
no, he's not. He's so, like this is, like, beneficial to both of them, right? Like, this is his retirement plan. This will give him, like, millions of dollars. Because, like, you know, they pay for the, like, for guys like Malkovich, like, Marvel has to pay. Like, there's no, like, I've heard about it. Like everybody has heard. Like, they have to actually pay for guys like these guys. Like, it's not even like, oh, we're going to, like, people like Vanessa Kirby, Joseph Quinn, Julia Gardner, even Ebon, like, all these guys, they're not getting paid. They're getting paid a nice amount, but they're not getting paid, like, superstar salaries because, like, you know, Marvel frames it as, oh, well, you're in a Marvel movie. You can do whatever you want after this. Right.
Yeah.
To which I mean, I'm going to say no, yeah. But I mean, you know,
they also, it's not as lucrative as the early back end deals, but they do get back end deals. Yes. You know, and it's almost a promise of like, you do this now, you probably get more later, and at least there's guaranteed work later if your character's not being killed off.
It might be 10 years later, but right, you'll still get work.
Captain America, I think he got, I want to say the reported salary was like 300 grand, which is not a lot of money to be the lead in a big Hollywood movie. But his back-end deal and the future deals made that pretty fucking worthwhile for him. You know?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, Chris Hemsworth, I mean, from everything that I've heard is that, like, you know, this last Thor movie that they keep on talking about that he keeps on, like, shitting on all of the other Thor movies.
I'm glad he's taking some responsibility for it. He's like, yeah, I kind of fucked that up.
Yeah. But also, like, he's probably doing it because he wants that next payday. And he knows that he's, of the big three, he's the only one around. Because, I mean, we don't really talk about Ruffalo because Ruffalo is, like, he's officially become the Samuel L. Jackson of the Marvel universe, right? In a weird way.
Oh, do you need me there? Sure, I'll be there. Oh, you don't need me? Exactly. Fine. I don't really give a shit.
Because you're paying me. Like, he's literally one of those, like, what I love about Ruffalo is that he's this guy that's like, I've got so much other important shit that I get paid nothing for. And sometimes I actually have to pay too, that I will work as Hulk, Bruce Banner, whatever you want me to, but I will never let the quality dip.
Yeah.
Like that's the weirdest part about Ruffalo is that he, like, his work, even if the effects work might have dipped, he doesn't dip. Like, his work is always remains undefeated. But no, you're absolutely right. Like, that would be great. But, like, going back to the Malkovich as Mole Man.
Yeah.
Like, just because you can see it. Like, I can see that. Because he, like you said, he's like Giamatti.
Do a weird fucking accent. That's why I was like, pay that man his money. Like, if you don't know Rounders, go watch Rounders.
Oh my God. Teddy KGB, one of the all-time greats. Like, you know that this man is a master with Edward Norton and his little fuckery was trying to fuck around and try to steal scenes. And there's just like, no, you can't. Like, Teddy KGB is such a great all-timing character. Like, it's the only character that you really, truly remember from Rounders. Like, you don't remember, you don't even remember the real story.
I can't tell you anything about the two leads in that movie, except that it's Matt Damon and Ed Norton. I don't even remember. Why the fuck they're doing it. But I remember Teddy KGB and that table and like
those fucking Oreos and that milk.
Yeah.
No.
So another small piece of news. More Lord of the Rings movies coming from
Oh man. Like, so yeah. Well, there's that.
I just don't give a shit.
Like, okay, so, like, there's a part of me that, like, yeah, I don't give a shit either. I mean, they made me not give a shit when they did three movies out of The Hobbit. Like, yeah. Really. Like, when only one was really necessary, right? You could have made one really great. That was
three Zaslav, too. I know. Like, a Zaslav Warner Brothers-led Lord of the Rings movie? I don't even want to fucking see it, man.
But we're going to get it because, I mean, okay. So like that side of it is like, oh, whatever. I mean, I guess, I mean, you know, like it's interesting to me because I'm very curious. Like, okay. So like, you know, that there's trouble in Warner Brothers when they're not, when they've pivoted to Lord of the Rings instead of Harry Potter.
I mean, they announced a Harry Potter show.
Yeah. But
at this point, it feels like that's still a couple of years off. Like, they're kind of letting the heat around her maybe die down. Like, they got to put a muzzle on her. Be like, could you please not tweet anything? Like,
well, like, you know, the rumors are that, like, okay, so, like, Warner Brothers can't do anything because it's so radioactive. So much so that their initial plans to bring all the whole, like, they were set to actually spend a boatload of money to bring back everybody. And I'm not talking like just like, you know,
to do the Cursed Child.
To do the Cursed Child part one and two. And they can't because this fucking lady has decided to start a war against trans people. And when
instead, like, the audiobook company is just like, hey, what if we re-recorded the audiobooks with the entire cast of the films? And they're like, sure, we're down for that.
And like, literally, like when your creator is actually fighting with your Harry Potter, and your Harry Potter is not the crazy one, and he's just like, I don't know what to do. Like, you know that you're like this, your golden goose.
It's not even
is
a
in
Dan
Jeopardy.
Harmon Chevy Chase situation where it's like,
no,
are they both just assholes? Oh yeah, I mean,
no,
it's literally like, well, one of these people is the problem, and
the other one is Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah, it's not okay, Daniel Radcliffe.
Here's the crazy thing: what if like Disney has. Disney has the space to do something quite hilarious right now, which is that, like, let's say, like, one of the, like, the those early era rumors are true that Radcliffe is going to play a variant of Wolverine, right? Like, let's just say, wouldn't it be hilarious if Disney stole their Harry Potter for an undetermined amount of time because he was playing Wolverine in a TV series? An X-Men TV series, which I think that both of you and I are convinced that this is going to like that the TV series is the way to go. Like a Game of Thrones epic telenovela with mutants is the way to go, is to make it your flagship for Disney Plus and make it R-rated, right? Like, let's make it mature. Let's make it Game of Thrones. It doesn't have to be R. It can be PG-13.
No nudity, but, no super hard cursing, but, you know, you need that handful of characters, that, especially Wolverine, that get a little violent. You know, it doesn't have to be every episode, but, you know, once or twice a season, like super violent shit.
Could you imagine if they just tied him and they really fucked Warner Brothers and all of a sudden Daniel Radcliffe is Dan Radcliffe 2.0 Wolverine and like size appropriate Wolverine? Like, to me, that would be fucking hilarious. Even though it's probably not going to happen, like, we all know that probably, like, you know, we're about a year away from hearing that, you know, that Hugh Jackman has signed, like, you know, a 3 or 4 picture deal to come back as Wolverine and center the MCU in whatever form the X-Men take.
I wonder, like, you know, I get he does like the role. I get he likes the idea that they came up with, but also, much like Lucas returning to Star Wars to bring back the Star Wars, there's a divorce in the center of a lot of what's going on in Hugh Jackman's life right now. and that costs money. So
Well, and it's also midlife crisis, when you're wealthy, right?
Yeah, a little bit of midlife crisis, little I lost some money, like I need a purpose, I need to feel wanted. Like, there's a lot of that going into that, you know. and I'm not knocking the guy, like, that's total like human feelings. Like, I'm glad he's back, but I do hope that they move the fuck on. Like, I love him in the role. I'm happy to see him play it again. We're going to have to move on at some point. I would rather do it sooner than later. But absolutely, that's just me. Warner Brothers returning to Lord of the Rings. While there's another fucking studio literally putting out Lord of the Rings content, is I don't know.
It's wild, right? It's crazy. Wild.
It's not like a Marvel DC situation. It's literally the same fucking universe, man. And it's not in a Sony is working with Marvel kind of sort of way. It's like, we're doing this, we're doing this, fuck you too. Like,
I have to ask, because I know Peter Jackson is returning for producing, and then Andy Serkis is going to direct and mocap himself, which sounds a very dirty thing to do. Yeah. But here's the thing, is like, when is this taking place? Because it's called The Hunt for Gollum, right?
Yeah.
And I thought that we just had a video game where Gollum was the lead character in the Lord of the Rings universe. So it's like, I love the character, and I love like spending time with him because of Andy Serkis. But like, is this going
That's
to be
the
like,
only goodwill I have for it is Andy Serkis. Yeah. Who's not proven as a director at all, but...
No, because Venom, even though it makes a ton of money, Venom 2, it makes a ton of money,
it's not a movie.
It's not a movie, let's be honest. I as much as I like and I vibe on the cinematic universe of Venom, it is really not a movie in any way, shape, or form. Like, these things are just excuses for Tom Hardy to be Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
Like both Tom Hardys, the one that's kind of like what we've heard is shy and kind of nebulous and just wants to make rom-coms. And then the other one that's all about like the alpha male, the one that made Bronson, the one that just like the one that takes relish in being Bane. Like that's those movies. Like, I think in about 25 years, we're going to get like a great dissertation about, like, you know, him as this like weird, like this weird kind of like Lon Chaney Jr. figure who was trying to work out his emotional bullshit in these stupid, silly movies called Venom, like however many they make, to which I feel like Tom Hardy will gladly make like 7 or 8 of them and turn into the UK version of Vin Diesel. Like, you know, which he kind of already did. Like UK version of Vin Diesel in a weird way, though I do love his interactions with any kind of kid fan or anybody that loves dogs. Like, he is so just kind of a different person than he is with like everybody else, including people like his coworkers. Like, I mean, I don't know if you read about him and his antics on set with during Mad Max Fury Road.
Oh, yeah.
Like so much so that fucking the planned sequel didn't end up becoming a planned sequel, and we're getting which we honestly should have gotten anyways, because Furiosa is such a more interesting character, because Max is like, as much as I love the Mad Max series,
I don't want to fucking work with Tom Hardy anymore.
Exactly. When George Miller, the dude who loves everybody, the dude that basically created Pig or Babe, like, says, man, this dude's a fucking asshole, I don't want to work with him. And you know that you're a bad, you're a fucking jackalope. But like, all going back to like, you know, this whole thing of like the Lord of the Rings thing, I don't know. Like, I really don't know, because it's like, I'm a fan of the original trilogy, and that's it. Like, the Hobbit didn't work. I tried to watch that TV series.
Yeah.
And that first episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, that first episode is beautiful, and it's big, and you can see where all the money went, and J.A. Bayona, like, really directed the shit out of that. But then it was like, everything feels like the worst part of Game of Thrones, right? Yeah. Like the worst part of Game of Thrones. Like, I was expecting at least, like, House of the Dragon, but it's not even that. I don't know. No. So, anywho, it's not for me. So, I'm like, you know what? Good sailing. Peter Jackson, really, dude? Like, I thought that you were, like, thank God you're at least not making Beatles shit anymore. Eye roll. To which he is. I mean, we still, like, I just want him to make another Tintin movie. Like, that's all I care about.
Yeah, what the fuck happened? Like, I know it didn't make it any real money, but, like, God, man, I thought we were gonna, like, do this. And, like, it just hasn't happened.
It really hasn't. And, like, I will tell you this much. Like, Tintin is, like, one of the most charming Spielberg movies and the most, like, death-defyingly cinematic. Like Tintin, the movie was what I wanted both of these Indiana Jones movies to be. Even though James Mangold's version, I hate to say it, is better than, I can't believe I'm saying this, is better than what Spielberg and Lucas came up with.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I mean, I recently rewatched it a couple of months ago, and I was like, damn, this thing's fucking charming.
I was talking about it with my boss at work. He was like, hey, I just caught up with the last Indiana Jones movie. And I was like, it's not bad, right? He said, yeah, I thought it was really enjoyable. He said, honestly, the worst part of the movie is like the first like 20 minutes with the like de-age. I was like, yeah. He was like, I was watching it. He was like, if the whole movie's like this, I don't think I can watch it. He said, once they got away from that, like, I really enjoyed it. I was like, me too. Like, I think it's as good as the original three? No, not by far. But, like, it's not terrible, you know? It's just, you know, the de-aging stuff. They spend a little too much time with it. But, I mean, I understand why they did. Yeah, Peter Jackson, man. I don't know. He's in that line of people who can't seem to get out from under certain things, you know?
Yeah. Like, no, you're
much like JJ.
It's
you can't, like, you keep tripping yourself up. Like, we knock Super 8 as a Spielberg pastiche, and it is, but, like, it's also at least an attempt to try to do something that isn't literally a fucking IP, like literally somebody else's IP. You stepping into a property that's established and going like, let me do this. Like, at least it tried. And maybe because it wasn't super successful, it kind of scared him like off doing shit like that. But I don't know, man. I think
what broke him, honestly, is the Lovely Bones and him having to fire Ryan Gosling. Like, I think that broke him. Like, you heard the story, right? Like,
but that movie's like how terrible, man.
It is terrible. Well, because Mark Wahlberg's in it. Like, there's a lot of other fucking things that are really wrong with that movie. But I think one of the biggest issues is Mark Wahlberg being cast as the dad when, like, so, like, okay, so, like, here's the story.
I don't think
like,
Stanley Tucci has worked his shit in that movie, and I love Stanley
Tucci. No, he isn't. Yeah. Well, like, everything is wrong-headed. Even like, Saoirse Ronan, like, who's cast 10 years too late, because I've read that book. That book is amazing. That book is dark. It's beautiful. It makes you cry. But the thing is that the problem is that as soon as you cast somebody who is older than 12 or 13 years old, it deflates the issue. Because that's the thing. That is what is so horrifying about the first like 20 pages of that book is reading everything that happens to this 12-year-old, and when she goes like after like you know it sets the table. And like, there's just like a lot of things going on with The Lovely Bones that it's one of those books that never should have been turned into a movie, right? Like it's one of those things where it's just like, okay, how do you depict heaven? How do you depict this? How do you continually follow a pedophile serial killer and make it like a cinematic experience that people want to go to? But anywho, Peter Jackson in all of that stuff, like he really should have, like, I mean, like, if we're honest, he should have done Lord of the Rings, pieced out, used that money to make Frightener movies like The Frighteners or any of his other early work, right? Like gone back to like making small New Zealand films, but he didn't. And that's where he gets lost. He gets lost in the weeds. And yeah, man, like, I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, good for him, but it's just not going to be something I'm going to watch at all in any way, shape or form. Good luck to them.
Yeah. So the one last piece of news thing, I just wanted to ask you your opinion on if it is there any validity to it? So it's no secret that Paramount Plus isn't working for them. And it's no secret that Sony kind of wants to get into the streaming game, but doesn't know how at this point. So there's rumor that Sony and Paramount could be merging.
Yes. I've heard this. And so let us be honest about this. You and I are, like, I think we are of the like mind when we talk about these things, where the merging of studios is never a good thing. Yeah. Because job, like, not just job losses, but like, it's gonna cut, like, I know that sounds weird because we're always talking about there's too much content out there, but the whole thing is that it cuts content in half. Because if you think that they're going to continue the same output, you would be very, very stupid to think that. Because the first thing that's going to happen is if they merge together as one entity and it becomes Paramount Sony, right? Or Sony, just, it just becomes Sony, right? Or Sony Paramount Columbia, right? Like, everything becomes that. There's no Paramount movies anymore. There's no Sony movies anymore. There's this weird conglomeration, right? And like, the Paramount brand goes away, or the Sony brand goes away, and for better or for worse.
Yeah, I mean,
Paramount
absorbed Columbia, and Columbia, like, it kind of exists, but not really. The Columbia Pictures just really isn't a thing anymore. So, I don't like it. I will say this, though. Paramount Plus sucks. Not because of the content. The fucking service sucks. So,
it really does.
If Sony could fix that, maybe I'll just shrug my shoulders and be like, I guess. Like, that fucking app is terrible.
Yes. It really is. It really fucking is. But,
You have all this content, but I don't want to watch it because every time I boot up your app, it, like, it crashes, or, like, I have to click start, like, playing, like, 15 fucking times, or, like, I'll start something, and then it buffers, not because my internet's bad, because I can boot up Netflix and shit starts right away, but just because your fucking app is terrible, and it's just like, oh my god, this is why I don't watch anything on this stupid network.
No, which sucks, absolutely.
Because there's a lot of stuff on there that I'm like, oh, I would watch that. But, like, I remember trying to, so the only thing I'm currently watching on there is Young Sheldon, because I caught up to the new episodes. So I don't have to spend much time on there. But, like, when Frasier, the reboot, was coming, which season 2 is coming, so when the reboot happened, I was watching that. And like I had so many fucking problems trying to watch an episode of Frasier. Like I would click play on one episode and would play the previous episode and just like all these stupid issues. And I was like, this is so frustrating, man. Like I would rather just bootleg the show because at least then I'm not like constantly frustrated, like spending 10 minutes trying to get one episode of a 22 minute show to play. So yeah. if Sony, if they do merge and Sony could fix their streaming service, I guess I would just shrug my shoulders and be like, okay. So, and we'd have access, like probably steady access to a lot of Sony things that they basically just, they have to try to farm out to somebody, you know? Yep. So.
No, or just don't put on because they're not getting good deals. Right. Like, which I'm mad at, but at the same time, it's just, for me, it's like, it's closing another like historic, either or way, like it's shingling another historic studio that's been around for 100 years, and that's sad, like, and that shouldn't happen. But you know, when financial fuckos take over, like when Silicon Valley fuckos take over studios, this is what happens, because they all see, like, here's the thing, is that I don't understand, like, streaming is just as useless as it's just as useless as the, like, as streaming music, right? Like, they literally, like, Silicon Valley has literally ruined every piece of entertainment that they've gotten their dirty paws into, because nobody can listen, nobody sees the after effects, right? Like, why did Hollywood not just shut these fuckers down? Because we saw what they did to the music industry, right? Like, yeah. we saw it. What did they do? They promised trillions. They delivered nothing, and now the music industry, for better or for worse, is torn apart, and all we do is stream content. We don't get any really new artists unless by some random happenstance, a social media idiot comes to power. I mean, sounds like Hollywood right now. Sounds like what's happened to Hollywood, because they let the streamers come in. They let people like Apple. And certain people got paid, right? Like, you know, certain people got paid a lot of money and found their way, you know? But most people, no. Yeah. And the new creatives, not really, you know? So I don't know. This is not a good thing. Yeah. Like, this is not a good thing whatsoever. But again, we're in this era right now, so we're going to see how it all turns out. Because the last thing, like the worst part of this, and this will lead into like one of the bigger things that we're talking about, I think, is the worst part about this is that, like, the most important part of a movie studio, making fucking movies, has gone out the wayside.
Yeah.
Like, who the fuck makes movies now? Like literally, like, most things are not really movies. They're just IPs. Justify
existence. Gotta get a subscriber. We gotta get a subscriber.
When you do have something that is like maybe IP based, but it's trying to do something and it's trying to be entertaining, you don't promote it, and it makes no money whatsoever, or you don't promote it properly. And
I guess the answer to your question is A24. That's who makes them.
Yes. Yeah. Jesus Christ. Yeah, right? Like, my favorite part is you saw that Benny Safdie has started his movie with the Pebble. I honestly, like, after that article, we didn't even discuss that article, like, because we've been gone for so long. But like the Pebble, like everything I've heard, like, my favorite part about that article is that everything that sounded wild, I completely believe. Like, I 100% believe. Like, about the Pebble. I won't call him his name anymore, because it's just so, like, the fact that you pee in a Voss bottle and then you give it to somebody to dispose of, because what? Like, that sounds like some Vince McMahon shit. Like, you definitely learned from Vince. Like, there are people out there that, like, like, I don't even understand it, like, right? But I find that funny that they're like, A24 is about to find, like, is A24, like, A24 is an unstoppable thing, and the pebble is a brick wall, right? Like, who's gonna survive this? Who's gonna survive this low budget MMA movie where he literally has a thing in his contract that says he cannot be beaten in a movie? Like, how do you make an MMA movie about an underdog that's whole career is about getting the shit kicked out of him? How the hell do you make a movie about that guy with a guy who just, like, who refuses to remove in his contract that he cannot lose a fight?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. I mean, where the fuck would Rocky, like, as a franchise be if he didn't lose?
Exactly. Exactly. Like, and we are talking about, like, and then Sylvester Stallone, even in the 80s, this motherfucker was, like, one of the most prima donnas in the world, and he still understood that at a certain point, Rocky needs to get beaten up and needs to lose part of his battle, right? I don't know, man. A24, you are right, but it's just one shingle, right? Like, we don't have anybody else. I mean, are they going to be the movie people? Meanwhile, everybody else is just, I don't know, recycled IPs and, you know, whatever. It's a very weird kind of place that we've gotten now at this point, especially with, like, the sale and merger of multiple studios. We'll see. And I'm not, you know, not too mad at it, I guess. I mean, you know, it is what it is. That we can't stop the tide. But stop talking about something like meh and start talking about something that's, like, actually kind of nice and fun, or at least from my perspective. We haven't talked about it, but what did you think of, unless you have other things,
two real quick things. Yeah. One, I know you don't watch it. Welcome to Wrexham is back. Holy shit. It continues to be the best fucking thing on television. I cry every single episode. I know that makes it sound like, why would I want to watch that? But it's not always like, oh my God, that's so sad. It's just like, people that don't understand, like, why we get so invested in sports. Watching this shit, it's just, oh my God. They're three episodes into this season. It's always a year behind, so I kind of already know what's going to happen at the end, because Wrexham is a big deal now, so it kind of makes the news. But still, watching these personal stories, it's so fucking just, like, heart-wrenching and also uplifting and just... You know, it's real fucking Ted Lasso, like, without the, like, Hollywood spin to it. Like, this is the real... There's a whole, like, half episode on this guy who lives in Wrexham now. Like, he talks about he was at the end of his rope years and years ago, and he had lost his job, and I was pretty sure I was going to kill myself. And I think he says his mom or somebody was like, you always enjoyed, like, the arts. Why don't you try going back to school? And he got a degree from an art school, became a photographer, lived in Wrexham. And he goes around, like, photographing not the team, but, like, things in Wrexham in regards to the team. Not just that, but... He's never been, he doesn't know really anything about football and has never set foot in the stadium. But, like, they showcase his photography, and it's fucking, it's just brilliant. And, like, his story, it's like, he's like, I love this town. This town saved my life. You know, I'm not a football fan. I've never been to a match. He's got all these pictures of these fans, like, on their way to the stadium and, like, celebrating afterwards or mourning a loss afterwards. It's just all this incredible stuff. And it's like, this is why. Like, this guy doesn't even care about the sport, and it's part of saving his life. Like, he was going to kill himself.
Jesus.
That's and, like, amazing. There's a whole story about this other guy. Like, it's not this season, but from last season, who was basically a lifelong alcoholic and got sober. And it's all of this shit. And it's so uplifting. And this could so easily be the show about these two famous dudes. And part of it is two famous dudes bought it. Like, Hugh Jackman's in the first episode. But they don't even make a huge deal out of Hugh Jackman is in this. You know?
That's great.
Like, he's just there. Like, it's so great that they're like, it starts off as like, oh, these two famous people bought this football team. But once they realize it's these other stories that matter. Like, there are people that live in the town now that are like half-assed celebrities because of this show. Like, there's this guy who runs this fucking shop that sells used DVDs. He's in a big box all day, and he just sells used DVDs that, like, they talk to him so much that, like, people come there. And they're like, I want to meet that guy. And it's so great. It's so great. So, like, even if you don't give a shit about soccer, football, whatever, this show is so fucking good. The other thing, Hax is back.
Oh, my God.
I love Hax so fucking much. Have you watched
any of it? Like, so I watched the first three episodes, but I haven't gone back. I really haven't, because it's hard with all the content, right?
Yeah, it's hard to discern, like, what, because there's a lot of shit I'm not watching that I'm sure I would love, and I just haven't made the time for. Gene Smart is so fucking good. It's a little difficult now. I'm watching Hax, and a lot of what they're doing is very similar to what Marvelous Miss Maisel was doing.
But anyway, go ahead. Please go ahead.
But it's back. It's fucking hysterical. Mm-hmm. They're burning it off at two episodes a clip, and I don't understand why. But this season is really, really, really good. But the whole show is really good. So.
Yeah. It is, like, I think, like, you know what? You absolutely put what is, not what stopped me, but what was the thing that was bothering me that I couldn't figure out. Like, I watched the first three episodes and I didn't even realize, oh, yeah, it's because I was in the thick of Maisel.
Yeah, it's very modern version of the story that they're telling, so much so that, like, this is not really spoilery, the crux of season three has been about her hosting a late night television show. Which is a big part of the end of Miss Maisel. You know, not necessarily hosting it, but being part of one. So
exactly.
It has very similar themes. It's like when she became famous, you know, like, we don't get a lot of that in Miss Maisel, and Hax is all about not her getting there, but it's what she is once she's got there, you know, when she seems a little washed up, which is kind of the end of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. But it's worth it for the performances are great. Matt, what's her name? Mad About You Lady is in this season.
Helen Hunt.
Yeah, Helen Hunt's in this season. She plays this, like, kind of ruthless executive. There's a really great moment with she's obsessed with pickleball. There's a whole thing with her on a pickleball court. It's really funny. But yeah, it's good if you're, you know, I understand, like, if, like, you watch three episodes and, like, it's just, it's like something I've already watched. So yeah, I get that. But yeah, Hax is back. I'm so, so happy about that. I wish they were, as much as I would love to have the whole season and binge it, I like, don't give me two episodes at a time. I just give me one episode. Like, I'm fine with that. So, the only other thing I had was X-Men. And if you're not caught up, we definitely don't need to talk
about it. Oh, no, I'm definitely caught up. Okay. I did want to say one thing about, like, you know, something that came out that I will not talk about. And I will just say two words. Unfrosted. Very bad. So much so, I got through 30 minutes of it, and I turned it off. And I will not be going back to it. Because it's that bad.
It kills me. There's like, so many people in that movie, and it's just not good.
It is not good. Like, I mean, this is the, like, I am the man who actually finished the stupid J-Lo music video weird-ass thing where you have Ben Affleck in a southern accent with a, literally playing the same character that Will Ferrell played in Eastbound and Down.
Yes.
Is literally the Ben Affleck character in that stupid fucking music video, like, extended music video thing. I finished that. I could not finish Unfrosted. Like, I'm going to say something. I feel like Jerry put everything on the table with Seinfeld and he has nothing left. Because nothing happened before. Like, I love Seinfeld so much that I try to go every place with him and it never, ever, ever works for me.
Seinfeld was a group. Like, it really was.
Yeah.
It was this magic chemistry of people. It's Larry Charles. It's Larry David. It's,
Julie Louise Dreyfus.
The
actors. It's the writing staff, the amazing writing staff who literally have created comedy over the last 20 years, like the pillars of comedy in the last 20 years. But Jerry's not funny. Like, Jerry's not funny anymore. I'm convinced.
I would argue that he might not have ever been funny. I've seen his stand-up, and I watched his recent stand-up special, and I think his stand-up is fine. He's not good outside of that.
He is, okay, so he is a comedic writer, not a comedic force. And what I mean by comedic force is like in the 80s, like, Eddie Murphy was a comedic force, right? And I think that we had mistaken Jerry as a comedic force because Seinfeld was called Seinfeld, right? And it starts with Seinfeld talking like in a comedic, like in a stand-up situation. So I think that because we were so ingrained with watching Jerry that we forgot that he's probably not. He's more of a writer, right? Like, he's more of a writer and a personality. I hate saying this, an unfunny version of Steve Martin. Like, I just finished the two-part Steve Martin documentary, and it wasn't anything I didn't know, but there was a lot that I, like Martin at a certain point was a comedic force, right? But then he transitioned, and he wanted to be something different, and he is something different. He is exactly what Jerry has always been, except for Jerry can't admit this. That he is not a comedic force. He is just a writer, and he's a good collaborator. He's a genius collaborator. That's it. But now, everything that I've seen, even in his comedy, the only thing that works in the modern era is comedians and coffee. And that's him not trying to be funny and him just existing with his friends.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I hated the B movie. I couldn't stand the B movie, man.
It was so stupid.
It really is. Like, and that goes to everything that Jerry does, right? Like, Jerry does things that are stupid. They are just dumb. At the core of the idea, like, who the fuck makes a movie about Pop-Tarts?
The Pop-Tart thing feels like a movie that would have existed. Actually, the B-movie does, too.
Yeah.
Like Rochelle, or Sack Lunch, or like all these Seinfeld movies that existed in that world, like
100%.
And it's funny as a joke. It's not funny as an actual fucking movie like, I can't remember the name of her, if it ever even had a name, the science fiction movie that
it
that
did plays. Not.
Okay.
Yes. the
it's
the,
Larry the David, it's the crazy scientist guy. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, it's a movie that exists in that world and should not actually exist in real life. So,
no, like, and that's
I want to see those characters talking about seeing Unfrosted the Pop-Tart Story, not the actual movie Unfrosted a Pop-Tart Story or whatever. I probably won't watch it. So, also that going back to the X-Men thing briefly, the finale's next week. We should probably just wait and talk about all of it post finale.
Yes, because I mean we haven't talked since Genosha, like even before Genosha, I think. But I feel like you are correct. Like next week should be the X-Men centric like season finale thing, because wow, we have a lot to talk about. Because yeah, like even this week's episode, like I keep on thinking that I'm not going to be stunned by it, but I'm like literally like I just, my jaw dropped. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, didn't we just have our red wedding?
Yeah.
And we're having another one? Jesus fucking Christ. Like, yeah.
I mild prediction, maybe not for this season, but possibly for next season. At some point, they're going to go back in time. They're going to kill Xavier, and we're going to get the Age of Apocalypse.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. They're kind of, aren't they setting it up for that though? Like, because
I feel like that's where we're headed. Like,
yeah,
if that's the season finale, I would not be surprised if Cable's like, we can go back in time, we can fix it. Cause he's talking about like he tried, they asked him why he didn't save all those people since he could time travel. And he's like, I kept going back and I couldn't, it kept pulling me away. Like, so if the idea becomes like, we can go back further and then like end whatever, and it just becomes, oh, we killed Xavier and that puts us into the Age of Apocalypse, which, because they very prominently have brought up lately, like, where the fuck is Bishop? What happened? He's just lost in time. Well, that's part of the Age of Apocalypse story. Bishop is the only one that remembers anything because of like his weird time travel paradox stuff. Mm-hmm. So like the fact that he's been missing and lost in time, like I'm like, oh, are we about to do the Age of Apocalypse? So mild prediction there. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about it a lot next week. So,
yes, but yeah, like absolutely.
let's talk about the Fall Guy. So, everybody that's seen it is really, really high on this movie, even Steven Spielberg. I'm with them. This movie is a lot of fucking fun. Ryan Gosling is infinitely charming. All of the stuff with him playing detective and the stuntmans, I love all of that. I did not want to see a rom-com.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I get that it was a fun surprise for a lot of people. I was kind of disappointed in how much of that there is.
I think that goes to the mismarketing of the movie. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Like, this is a movie that did not know how to market itself. Like, honestly, like... And I don't see how you get that wrong. Like, this movie is like it. Okay, so like I was telling somebody, this is literally like a, like, okay, let's cut to the mid 90s. And this is absolutely a mid 90s, early May release. I'm thinking, and forgive me, guys, because I know he's been canceled, but the movie is probably the best comp I have for it, which is Maverick. Yeah. Maverick was like this like weird, smart-assy movie that had everything in it, but it was perfectly marketed. It marketed the comedy. It marketed the charming lead, because, I mean, it literally is like you know, it's Maverick is Mel Gibson and Mel Gibson is Maverick, right? Like everything about it is very kind of modern. It's not a Western, but it is. Fall Guy is very similar in that regard to an early May, like an early May summer movie in the mid 90s. It has everything. It's all packed up. It's overlong. It's overstuffed, but it works on its charm, but it is overpacked. And it's like, it's a sugar rush, right? And, but I don't think that they properly like marketed it like to that end. But I hear a lot of people say, like, if you gave me a rom-com, give me a full rom-com. Don't give me rom-com action. And then also I hear the same thing about the action. It's like, okay, I just wanted the action. Don't give me the rom-com. And it's like, they kind of work together for me. Like, I'm one of those few people that I looked at it and I'm like, you know what? It's all a spicy margarita, to bring it back to the movie, right? It's all a spicy margarita on the beach in my swimming. What did they call it? A swimming outfit. Yeah. though it is very messy of a movie. Like I cannot like it is over. It's probably about 20 minutes too long. It's yeah. Like way like it is overlong by like about 20 minutes. Like it should have been a sub 2 hour movie, not a 2 hour and 20 minute movie.
Yeah, there's definitely some stuff that could have been cut. Like a lot of, I hate to say it, I love Emily Blunt. A lot of the stuff with her could have gone like a little bit by the wayside for me, at least. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't cut any of the action stuff. I think all of it fucking works incredibly well. I honestly didn't know that Aaron Taylor Johnson was in this movie.
Oh my god, he's so I guess I
missed that somewhere. And holy shit, was he just. He's so much fun just playing an absolute piece of shit douchebag.
My favorite part was I didn't expect the end. The twist.
Yeah.
But the twist is so perfect, right? Like, it's so perfect that they got the person. Like, I don't want, like, okay, so we're going to talk spoilers.
I'm with you on not spoiling that, though, because not a lot of people saw this movie.
Like, this is true.
There is a surprise cameo. They do get the cast of the Fall Guy to cameo, most of them.
Yes.
Lee Majors is there. What's her name's there? I'm trying to blank on her name now. Blonde from the 80s. She's there.
Oh god. Heather Thomas. That's who it is. Yeah. Heather Thomas. She played Jody. Like she was the analogous to the Whatchamacallit character, to the Emily Blunt character, because she was Jodie also. So yeah, Heather Thomas.
Yeah, so like she's there. It's great. Like those little brief cameos, I thought were really really fun. Yes, that big cameo at the end, I was just like, holy shit! It was the like I know you've seen The Player.
Yes. Of like, course, it's the,
end of The Player is so fucking good. Like it's like holy shit, Bruno. How did you pull this off?
Oh, it's so great. Like the weirdest part about that is you want to like as I've gotten older, I've wanted to see that movie with Bruno and Julia Roberts, right? Like at the end of The Player, like I really want to see that fucking movie because it's so stupid. Like it's so, but it's also very, very much of what Bruno was making at the time, right? Like you could absolutely have seen that. And, but the thing is that when you watch the trailer for the movie at the end of Fall Guy and they get the guy, absolutely feels like a movie that he would have done.
Oh yeah, like 100%.
Be called 100%. Space, like literally Space Cowboy. Yeah, but no. My favorite part is all I could kept on thinking about was he could be Space Cowboy in Silverhawks, like the guy that they cast.
Yeah,
because all you need, like it just literally was like, oh my god, like they literally had, like they're playing on like Silver Ox. That's literally what they're doing with this dude. And I don't, like, that was so much fucking fun. Like, what I like about the movie is it feels, what I fell in love with this movie, because this movie, like, I think that this year is the year of the movies that we were going to sleep on, because it's made no money. It's made $28 million. It should have made double that. It should have made around 60. Just for Emily Blunt and fucking Ryan Gosling being together in a movie, yeah, it should have made more money.
You're talking about the two of the stars of the two biggest movies of last year.
Exactly. Exactly. So, but it's one of the, it's like this thing, it's like Abigail, like it's almost too good for movie audiences right now. But this one is a little different because it's overstuffed. I could see the reasons why people don't like the movie, right? Like, or are conflicted about it, because we just can't just have, like, for me, I came in, I had a lot of, like, I didn't have a lot of baggage. I just wanted to see a fun movie, and I got that. I got a lot of, like, I got something that had too many ideas, and far too often we have movies that don't have enough ideas.
That, like, 2 hours of something that has a lot going on is a lot better than 2 hours of something that you're just like, because it is a lot, it could be shorter. I never, like, I feel like the rom-com stuff drug, but that's because I'm not the biggest rom-com guy and kind of just eye-rolled at it. At no point in time in this movie that was I ever just like, fuck, when is this going to be over? Like, no, absolutely, it does not a good job of, and I one more negative thing I do have to say about it. I don't like the editing. And I don't mean like the scene, like in scene editing. I'm talking about the way they piece the story together editing, like cutting from like this thing to that thing. It was very jarring to me when they would do that. Like it didn't feel natural. Like when there's a big like stunt fight, like escape scene with Colt, and it keeps cutting back to her. And it felt jarring every fucking time to me. Like, maybe it's just me. But anyway, but at no point in time was I ever like, God, when is this going to be over? This is taking, like, it is about 20 minutes too long. But I think that 20 minutes would just make the movie flow better. It didn't make me feel like, oh, God, they should have cut 20 minutes out of this because it drags, you know?
Absolutely. But like, I will say this, like I've heard there's an extended cut that's 20 minutes longer. And I almost wonder if they couldn't decide on a 2 hour and 40 minute movie or a 2 hour movie. So they compromised, and the compromise is compromising the movie itself, because there are so many people, like, okay, so, like, the biggest gripe I have with it is that the supporting characters get the short shift, they cast some of the greatest supporting comedic actors. Stephanie Hughes gets one scene.
Yeah.
Though she is vitally important to the plot, and I feel like there's probably, like, 3 or 4 more scenes. Winston Duke gets the short shift.
Absolutely, which, man. That them together, the two scenes we get of them, 2 or 3 scenes we get of them together
with the movie so quotes,
fucking good. Like, I went and saw this with a lady friend, and we were calling out the quotes. Like, and my fucking Last of the Mohicans was my favorite. Like, when he started doing that, I was like shaking my fist. I was like, oh my God, Last of the Mohicans.
Because he has the axe. Like, that's the best part. Like, it's all, what I love about that moment is that everything is appropriate. Like, Winston Duke's quotes are super appropriate for the era. He's not just saying them to say them. Like, everything has a purpose, right? Like, and that Last of the Mohicans quote is so great. Like, it's just, they have the right energy, right? Like, that's the energy I wanted from him and Mark Wahlberg in their remake of a TV show that was terrible because Mark Wahlberg can't share the screen with anybody because he's a fucking vacuum of like wanting ego and star and charm, which he's not any of those things. But no, it wasn't The Equalizer. It's the Spencer for Hire. You know, but yeah, dude, like they get the short shift, right? Like that's the biggest gripe I have for a movie that's 2 hours and 20 minutes with credits. Those characters, like even Hannah Winningham's character, like I loved her, the Diet Coke queen, the ultimate, like, you know, like her and Aaron Taylor Johnson, like their chemistry was like interesting. And like, I wanted to see more of everybody. And like I said, I've heard that there's an extended cut out there. I've heard that the rumor is that like there was a lot of contention in like how long this movie should be as opposed to how long it is. And I almost wonder if this was a compromise. And of course the compromise is that we don't get anything. Hold on a second. Not a fully realized story, but like a story that's in between, like, you know, something that would have cut everything out and left it kind of lifeless, or something that's a messy mess, or something that's the complete story that they told, right? Like the 3 hour complete story, because this does feel in the best way. I know that I was talking shit about IPs and stuff, but this in the best way possible feels like a two part, feels like a two part, like pilot for.
Yeah. I mean, it is IP, but for me, I like it's IP in the way that like 21 Jump Street was IP.
Exactly.
You know, is it something that some people might recognize? Yes. But it's also something different than like it's a version of that story. Like I really appreciate like taking this like kind of fallen IP and reviving it in this way as a love letter to stunt work. I mean, if you want to get real worldy, like if you're going to see this before you watch the documentary, but there's a documentary about Daniel Radcliffe's stunt double from the Potter films, and something similar to what happens to Colt in this movie happens to him, and it's life changing, life altering, like, and like very, very sad. But it both of these things kind of give a good light to you know, these people absolutely do not get enough credit. Like there's a scene fairly early on when they reunite on the filming of this new movie, and it's played for laughs and played because she's being a little spiteful and kind of knows he can more or less take it, but he later in the movie he does go like, you know, that hurts, right? Like but they film the scene where they light him on fire like several fucking times. Like over and over and over. And then also the scene where he blows up and smashes into the rock or whatever, the wall or whatever that is. They film that several times. And he's just like, it does hurt when you light yourself on fire. Like you have all the precautions. You know what, but it still does fucking hurt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I just love, like, so there's a thing that so Fall Guy, the reason why I love it so much, and I do love it, like this and Abigail are the movies that I'm going to die on the hill for, because, and a personal favorite of both of ours, like, I'm loving the messy movie of 2024, because also the Department of Ungentlemanly Warfare, but what I love about Fall Guy is it's something that I as a kid of the 80s really learned to love. And it goes back to Indiana Jones, where I love a movie, and Gosling does this all the time, which is I love a movie where a dude gets the shit beat out of him. Like an average dude just goes through the ringer, and that started Gosling's Indiana Jones.
Gosling's really good at that. He's really fucking good at that. If you go back and watch the movie he did with Russell Crowe, which I just caught up with, The Nice Guys.
Oh,
he's
so good
at just getting the shit kicked out of him.
Like, yes, he is. He makes an art out of it, right? Like, for me, it began with Raiders and seeing Harrison Ford just get the ever-living shit kicked out of him. It got upped with Die Hard. And I think that after those two, like, and I know those movies are years apart, but as a kid, I can't, like, as my brain, my melty brain can't discern when those two things happened. And also Arnold Schwarzenegger and Predator. Like, these three things combined into this weird nebulous thing in my brain where if a movie hero has the snot kicked out of him consistently in the movie, like, that's a thing that I want and I love. Like, I will make a bold statement. If Ryan Gosling wasn't 42 years old, oh, actually, he's the perfect age right now because Ford was 40 when he made Indiana Jones or when he made Raiders. He could play Jones.
Oh,
he's
absolutely.
He's got not just the swagger, but he's got what I feel like no one else got, which is the willingness to get the snot kicked out of him, but look fucking awesome doing it, right? Like the whole part of I've never met a, like there's a part where this film comes into it's like it comes to the point where all the plots cross-pollinate. And you get the reveal of what really happened. And dudes are punching him, right? They're literally punching him. And he says the most Indiana Jones line I've ever heard outside of an Indiana Jones movie, which is, there's never a punch I've never met a punch that I didn't remember, which is such a great fucking line. And it's so just like, everything about this movie, especially that Ryan Gosling's willingness to not just look goofy, which he does all the time in the movie, but that like it goes back. It's the whole anti-Pebble thing of like, I'm going to write in my contract. My ego is so big that I can't have anybody beat me up. What? Like, that's the whole part of like a great action movie is a dude who rises to the challenge and he does get hurt. And this movie kind of does that perfectly because it's designed to be that, right? Like, it's about stuntmen.
Part of the reason Die Hard is the movie it is and the Die Hard sequels are the movie that they are, and this is a Michael Scott argument too, but in the first Die Hard movie, he is repeatedly at a disadvantage. He's never the fucking superhero. He spends half the movie with his feet wrapped up in like sheets because he walked through glass because he took his shoes off because some dipshit on a plane told him it would help with the jet lag. It's the everyman idea. And of course, Colt Seavers isn't necessarily an everyman, but in this world, like, he's not the fucking superstar. Like, despite how charming and handsome and whatever he is, like he's not the superstar. The other guy. I love the fucking line where he's like, you're out of your mind. How many times do I have to tell you? Carbs are good for you. Your brain runs on glucose.
That is so great, right? Like, it's so just like shout out to Drew Pierce, who is the screenwriter, and like just gets what you like. It's a throwback to a certain kind of film. And a film that we don't get anymore. And like again, also shout out to David Lichtich, who like is proving like, you know, like his second career as a film director.
Yeah, he was a stunt performer, right?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, he was Brad Pitt's stunt performer. So like the funniest part is that when Pitt talks about it, like he's like, well, like, you know, Cliff Booth and David Lichtich are kind of like one and the same because like that relationship is what I based I David Liddich is what I based him, like what I based Cliff Booth off of, because he's like, you think I'm cool? He's like, the person that I think is cool is David Liddich, because David Liddich
seems like an infinitely charming, like he seems like such a good dude. Like, just whenever I see anything, like I'll say this. I didn't see Bullet Train. I don't think he's a great director. I don't. Mm-hmm. Like, okay. I think he's a competent director, but I do see that, like, I think Deadpool 2 is a lot of fun, but it doesn't have what Deadpool 1 has.
You are correct in that. You are very correct in that.
It's a competently made film, but it's not as... It doesn't move the way Deadpool, the first Deadpool does. And
No, it does not. I
don't think he's a great director. But I support all of this shit because he seems like a good dude. He knows how to make a film. He knows what's important to make a film. Like when Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt are having the conversation about the movie, I feel like almost all of this movie is taken from bits and pieces of this man's life.
Oh, absolutely. Like,
because 100% he's had that conversation, maybe not with the director of a film, but with other people about the film that he's making. This guy who, for most people, would just be like, oh, he's just a stunt performer, like, understands to take all of this extremely seriously. Like, I love a lot of this fucking movie. I hate that I didn't love the entire thing, like, just wholeheartedly. But it's also not a movie where I could sit and go, like, would I watch it again? Absolutely would watch it again. And, like, B, I would recommend this to literally anybody.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Like, I think I love it a little bit more because I love the rom-com of it all. Like, I don't mind, this is the kind of rom-com that I love. I hate rom-coms. I'm not a person that loves rom-coms. Like, though the elite section of rom-coms are the things that I love. This is my favorite kind of rom-com where one person is super mad at the other person for justified reasons.
Princess Bride-y, right?
Yes, like, very. And this is what I don't like. I'm surprised that neither one of us mentioned it, but man, is this a Howard Hawks movie or is this not a fucking Howard Hawks movie?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like this would have been like if this was made literally in the 50s, it would have starred Cary Grant as a stunt performer. I know that sounds weird, guys, but it would have starred him and somebody like Rosalind Russell. Like, because that's the kind of energy it gives off. Like, it's a very Howard Hawksian, like, and what I love is that it's not Howard Hawksian in the way that I think that people would traditionally think of it, but like classic Hollywood guys would get, which is that it's about professionals that know how to do their fucking job better than anybody else. And it's proven throughout the movie, right?
I love how about the movies it is. Like, yes. There's so much in there that, like, I don't even know where to start, but, like, they're just pulling, literally... self-referential stuff. The whole fucking crew are wearing jackets that are the production company of the people that made the movie.
87 North. Like, great, right? Like, it's so... Fuck, man. It's so good. Or the jumpsuits that they're wearing. Like, the dudes that are wearing. They have, like, the stuntman jumpsuits. And it's like... Or, like, the way that Emily Blunt dresses. Like, it's very kind of like... My wife said, like, you know, people, like, women have been wearing rompers for a long time. She's like, it's not just Greta Gerwig with a big hat and that. And I'm like, but that's the comp they're going for.
Oh, yeah. That's Emily Blunt straight up said, like, yeah, I kind of based, like, what I was doing on Greta Gerwig. So,
yeah. Which works perfectly.
Yeah. The set designer thing, which is very, very brief, or costume, yes. Or prop designer.
Yes.
With the gun thing, she's like, what the fuck? Like, why is it designed like this? Then literally 45 minutes later, she beats yes. the shit out of somebody with this, and she's like, oh, I get it now.
Like, yeah, I'm really rocking this thing. But then the best part about that is the through line is that when the person that shows up to save the movie within the movie in the trailer, and you see him rock it, there was yeah. the one thing that I thought about was, oh my God, if they cast him as the thing that we keep on hearing about, fuck, is he going to rule in that role?
Yeah.
Because he's designed for it. I'm like, why has no one ever seen and cast him as that particular kind of role? Because isn't he? Well, he did try to get a certain specific graphic novel that off the ground for a very yeah. long time because it was that particular aspect. And I know guys were being very roundabout about
it's
this.
It's so much
trust
fun,
me.
Though. Like, yeah, you know, if it gets spoiled for you, it, like through social media or whatever, that sucks. But it did not get spoiled for me, and I was delighted. Like when
oh, God,
it happened,
I laughed so hard when I saw him show up, because it was just, it's perfect. It's literally perfect. And the best part is that, like, the funniest part is that, like, it's a move where you go, yeah, like if they had just casted this guy,
yep.
there would have been no problems, and Colt Seavers would never have this new arena to like live his life in, right? Like the whole like solving mystery stuff or having this huge issue. But it's also like, you know, like it absolutely is the whole thing. I also did love, did you see the posters that are in Aaron Taylor Johnson's? Good,
right.
Bad cop, good boy is yeah. my favorite. I want that fucking movie. Like I just want that movie. But my favorite part is that it's a joke that's afterwards because we don't get that until we see Jean-Claude, his dog, the dog that he goes on a side quest with, which if they ever make a sequel, which I don't think that they will, if they don't have Jean-Claude as his dog, I will be very upset because it's just like the best thing. Like it's the best poppy, like, moment in the movie for me, like that car chase set to Phil Collins's Against All Odds,
yeah,
is kind of like the perfect, like, is like the perfect moment for me because it's just so much fun. And how, like, what they do with that particular action scene.
So, one trivia thing, Metal Storm, mm-hmm. the movie in the movie, is actually a real movie,
actually a movie. Yes.
Yeah, they 3D. Used a lot of ideas from that movie, like as part of the. So they're basically remaking an old
Metal
shitty
Storm.
Sci-fi movie,
yes.
which is an interesting, like inside the like movie inside the movie kind of like Hollywoody thing, like, you know, oh, they're making this big sci-fi epic, but also it's a remake. So
yeah, it's a remake of a movie that stars Tim Thomerson and Kelly Preston and Richard Mole by Charles Band. If you know the name Charles Band, that's how deep Lititch and screenwriter Drew Pearce went with their movie within a movie, which I love this concept. Like if I wish from this point forward that if you're going to do a movie within a movie, that you take a shitty, shitty movie from the 80s and use that as the reference point.
Yeah, it's genius.
It really is. And if you've ever seen, like, the best part is that if you've seen Metal Storm, the destruction of Jared Synth in 3D, which is the whole title of the fucking movie. That is the whole title, guys. Look up Metal Storm and you will find that it is called Metal Storm, the destruction of Jared Synth in 3D, because it was a 3D movie in the 80s. And yeah, like, you've got to see this movie, just like, not in preparation to see Fall Guy, but just so that you get some of the inside jokes. Like, some of the inside jokes are hilarious. Like, the truck. The truck is literally the truck that they use in the movie. The truck from
Metal Storm, yeah.
Yeah. which I kind of love that they did this. Like, that's the kind of elite level, like, storytelling that they're using in this movie. Other factoids that you found that were, like, that were amusing.
I wanted to ask you your opinion on the use of the Kiss song, "I Was Made for Loving You," which is featured, I don't think I'm lying, in every fucking scene of this film. it's a joke, right? Like, yes, am I misreading it? Like, it's intentionally done as, like, how many ways can we do that? Because, like, there's a, like, super dramatic moment in the movie, and, like, you think, I mean, you know he's not dead, but they literally do a, like, this sad instrumental version of "I Was Made for Loving You" over this moment of, like, Colt Seavers might be dead. I'm like, at that point, I was like, oh, this is the joke, right? That they just, like, it's this, like, thing where, oh, old movies used to, like, we have the one song, so we got to keep playing this fucking song. So they're like, oh, we got the rights to this song. We're going to, how many different spins can we put on this song?
Yeah. No, and, like, they literally do, like, I think it's like four versions, including their own version, which is by Youngblood, which is great. Yeah. Like I was going to recommend to people, because I'm waiting for them to drop the vinyl, because I really want this soundtrack, because the needle drops in this song, in this, are pretty fucking great. Like, they did create a really great soundtrack for this movie that like, and I like, you know, that, like, okay, so, like, you have to know that something's working for you if, like, their use of a Taylor Swift song, you're kind of like, okay, I like this. I like the fact that they're using this for, you know, for not only comedic effect but storytelling, right? Like I know that I was like, this soundtrack was made for me. Like, and it's a great soundtrack. Like, it's a really, like, it's steeped in 80s rock and just a lot of fun.
did you love the Miami Vice?
Fucking... Oh my God. Stunt spectacular. And also, who, like, I just want to know, whose decision was it to let Ryan Gosling wear a series of stunt jackets? Like stunt crew jackets,
which is 100% got to be a, like, oh yeah, Ryan Gosling was in this movie where he was a former stuntman and he drove a getaway car and he had a cool car, fucking jacket. Like, it's all those, like, self-referential things that, like, that's what I really, really, like, I wanted more of that. I wanted the movie to just be all of that. And I think if I see it a second time, I'll be way more accepting of what it is, instead of like, oh, I don't really like the, like, I don't like the, with him and her together, I was usually okay. But, like, some of it just went on too long. Anyway, I just didn't love the rom-com stuff. But yeah, like, all of that self-referential stuff, like, it's so much fun. There's some shit in it that makes absolutely no sense. The sword fight in the apartment with the fake sword that cuts through stuff. Like, what?
Yes. or the blanks.
Yeah. Which I get, but also, like, considering recent things that have happened, feels a little, like,
a little, I'm glad they didn't cut it.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm glad they didn't cut it. It works. It's a lot of fun. But also, there's this whole thing about, like, somebody died, man.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, I guess for people like us, Brandon Lee is never too far from our minds.
No.
Like,
no,
in regards to, like, failed stunts. So, but it is a fun scene where the guy shoots him with the gun. And he just like, he knows they're blanks. So he just fucking plays dead.
He plays dead. Like, that's the best part. He's just like, okay, I'm just gonna play possum for a little bit. It's a lot of fucking fun. Like a movie that's made with this kind of passion to just entertain, you kind of can't be mad at. Like that's my thing, is like, it's like, there's a lot of movies that, like, are just disingenuous cash grabs, but this is not one of them. This is, like, actually, like, I love when genre becomes a passion piece for people.
Yeah.
And that's definitely what happened to David Lidditch with this movie. He was like...
It deserves to make so much more money than it...
It does.
Like, I wonder if it's going to get, like, I don't know. Do you think the studio
will...
Like,
it's going to be a sleeper?
Yeah, do you think the studio will just be like, oh shit, let's cut our losses and dump it on VOD in 3 weeks?
Okay, so there's a part of me that wishes that happened so I could stay at home and just have Fall Guy on a continuous fucking loop. And especially if they do release the extended cut. But there's also a part of me that really wants to, like there's part of me that almost wishes that this movie becomes an unexpected, like, surprise hit. Like, it makes the same amount this weekend as it did last weekend, and it just keeps on making money because people are like, hey, go see The Fall Guy. It's better than you think it is. And just word of mouth gets around, and it just slowly just starts making, not bank, but just enough to justify its existence.
If it makes $20 million and spends the next 8 weeks just making $20 million, that's a success.
Yeah, that is. No, absolutely. And like the worst part is that all I wanted, like, there were two things that I wanted after I finished this movie. I wanted to watch it again, and I wanted another fucking movie.
Yeah.
And
we're not going to get another one because it didn't make any money. So.
Exactly. Like, my only hope is that it becomes a sleeper. Like, it starts off this way and it just, like you said, like, it becomes like this whole thing where, like, I can't remember what movie it was last year that we were all like, man, I made no money. But then it ended up making a boatload of money because it just stayed around, and it just kept on continually to make. Oh, you know what? Like, I know it's not the same comp, but if like, you know, the word of mouth gets around, like, everything and everywhere and all at once, like, where it just continually just starts to slow roll and make money. Like, you know. Yeah. I would love that, because it's like,
that movie never made $50 million in a single weekend. It just kept making $10 million over the course of like 14 weeks.
Yep, exactly. And just became an unexpected cultural, like, event. But also additionally, like, I don't, like, again, I'm not opposed to it coming on VOD in 3 weeks, because I know absolutely what I would do. I'd just purchase the shit out of it. And like I said, just, it would be a continual, like, looping, because I, like, this is the kind of movie that's like I said, it's a Howard Hawks film. You hang out with these people. Like, it's no different than, like, you know, like, one of our favorite films, our mutual favorite films, Rio Bravo, where you come in and it's like the things that you didn't like maybe at first, you come to warm up to. Like, I totally expect you to, like, be like, at a certain point, like, maybe in 5 years, you're like, you know what? I'm okay with the Fall Guy rom-com aspect of it. It works for me now. I've seen it enough to where it works. I've seen the extended edition enough where it works. Because it's like, you know, the rough edges become what you end up liking the most about a movie like this. And I just, like, again, it's one of these things where I'm like, I guess I'm just alone on this hill because everybody else doesn't want to get up in on this action, this fun action, right? Like I said, like, Abigail is like, I am very shocked that Abigail made no money, because it is such a great horror film. Like, it's such a great concept, execution, performance. It's just, it works from top to bottom. And like, literally nobody went to go see it. And I'm just like, y'all really just wanted these guys to make Scream movies for the rest of their lives, I guess. Audience. Okay. But with Fall Guy, it's like the same thing. I'm like, man, this movie is so, like, we talk about, everybody talks a good game about wanting like original things or wanting things to be fun.
Yeah.
But when we get something that's the real deal, everybody like,
oh, yeah, no. I don't know about that.
Yeah, it's like, yeah. What? Like, Ryan Gosling is like, this is the Ryan Gosling you want. Like, this is like Ken adjacent, right? Like, it's like, you know, he's, I mean, the guy is funny as fuck, charismatic as fuck. Like, what the fuck is going on here? Why aren't we, like, why isn't everybody going to see this shit? Because, like, isn't this the Ryan Gosling we all want? Because it is. It's not, it may be a different pitch, but it's the same kind of comedic charm that Ken is.
Yeah.
Like, I will be, like you said, I have a feeling like it's not going to do anything this weekend. And again, by the time Mad Max comes out, it will be on VOD. Yeah. Which is sad. Not to take anything away from Mad Max. I'm super excited. I'm actually going to see it this on Wednesday. Like at a press screening. So I'm super stoked for that. Oddly enough, I'm seeing that in Bike Riders, which feels like so adjacent to Fall Guy, because like I could totally see Fall Guy 2 taking place in either one of those movies, like stunt community, right? Yeah. the best possibility about this is that maybe it becomes a Buffy the Vampire Slayer situation where they like the movie is so well loved that it becomes a TV series with not the cast but the creatives like Lidditch and Drew Pierce are able to show run the show, right?
I mean we've seen it before. The Gentleman was not a box office success.
No.
But the TV show has been doing pretty well for Netflix.
Yep. So. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like that would be great. Like if they could do something like that. You know, that would probably, I guess, be the best case scenario. But yeah, like it's a fun summer movie. Like and it's not that it's been a while, but it feels like it's been a while since we just have a pure popcorn movie.
I'm with Barbie. I love Barbie. I appreciate the, we're gonna make a fun movie, but also say something about the culture. Like other than like, hey, stunt performers don't get their due. That's not really necessarily, it's a culture of Hollywood thing, but it's not like the culture of the world thing. This movie is not making any fucking statements on like anything like that. It's not trying to like, I don't want to say push an agenda, but it is pushing the agenda of like, hey, stuntmen deserve better, but it's not trying to like open people's eyes to like shit that's wrong in the world. It's just like, hey, we're making a fun movie. Stuntmen don't get enough credit. You know, Hollywood actors are kind of dicks most of the time. Like, you know, it's like, oh shit, we already knew, but hey, this is a lot of fun. And part of me is just like, there's a certain subset of people who scream for this kind of entertainment, and then they're not going out and supporting it. So, you know, I hate to sound like Bill Burr, but much in the same way people stomp their feet about women's sports, and then they're constantly underattended and underfunded. Like, women basketball players, there's a whole episode. There's been episodes about this in Welcome to Wrexham. There's a female Wrexham football team. When Ryan and what's his name? When they took over the club, they took also, that included taking over the female team. And they were not even semi-pro, I guess, the female team.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't pay them. Like, by rule, they could not pay what? These ladies to come play football because of they're so far down in, like, what kind of league they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just by rule, they can't be paid a salary. And oh, Jesus that's Christ. So fucked up. And it's just yeah. like, the like, we're stomping our feet about this, but like, nobody's changed. Like, legally, they couldn't pay these women. Like, that's oh, fucking weird, man. Like,
that really is. That's really just kind of like crazy. That's really crazy and stupid. But interestingly, like yeah, like, but also like my other favorite part about this is that Jesus, I lost the thread. But yeah, I just lost the thread. I'm so sorry. Like, I literally do not know what I was gonna say next after that, but I know what I was going to say. Like, the respectability, like that aspect is, it's done such with a light touch. It's kind yeah. of funny because it's like, it's never heavy handed. It's always just kind of like, it's like going back to Ted Lasso. It's exactly what Ted Lasso does, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the lightest of touches, but it also is an unexpected, it comes from an unexpected angle.
Be heavy-handed about female directors in Hollywood. Like,
yeah.
that is a very small part of the plot, and it does come up, but it doesn't hijack the movie to be about that. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, absolutely. It says like, things, but it does it with the lightest touches yeah. that doesn't call attention to it. Like, this is a message movie.
It doesn't call attention to the fact that every technical thing on a movie has a Oscar category, basically, except for stunt mm-hmm. performers. It's mentioned one time in the movie, and like, it doesn't beat that over the head over and over and over mm-hmm. again. Like, even though there's a big campaign to get them Oscar category, rightfully so. Like, it's just, I appreciate that, like, you know, it's not like shoving messages down your throat. And like I said, there's a whole contingent of people who claim that they want to go back to that level of like, don't preach at me kind of thing, but then they're not going out to see this movie. Like, you yeah. know, like,
no,
don't
absolutely.
Don't scream about how you want something and then don't fucking show up for it. Like, when they do give it to you, it's not like it's rampant these days. You know, we stomped our feet for like more accurate nerd. Like, stop. Sorry. She just walked.
No, she got on the pedestal right there. She got on her she was yeah. like, yes, Dad, tell him.
she just woke up from her nap and was like, what's going yeah. on? But like, I mean, we wanted more accurate comic book movies. We got them. Like, and they're rampant now. So the quality varies, and we don't show up for all of them. That I get. Like, movies like this are not happening often. When they do, fucking show up for it. So. Yeah, it makes me mad it didn't make more money.
Yeah, so. It really does. But you know what? At the end of the day, like, you know, it's because we're not going to get any more sequels. But like somebody told me, like, you know, in 20 years, it's not going to matter. It's just going to be the movie and how great the movie is. Right. And I was like, yeah, but it's still painful. And you're like, but like, you know, you were there. You were at ground zero for... Like, you know, he was like, you were at ground zero for everything in 82 that didn't work, right? The Thing, Blade Runner, Tron. And he's like, you survived. Everything survived. Those movies survived, especially, and have like cult followings. And most of them, he's like, all of them all got sequels.
Yeah.
And he made a very salient point. And now I don't want to wait 20 fucking years and be like, you know, 66 or 65 when The Fall Guy Part 2 comes out and old man Gosling is still doing stunts, though it would be pretty hilarious. But at the same time, like, you know, we're in an ecosystem where stranger things have happened, right? Yep. So at the end of the day, like, this is a movie that I can get behind.
Yeah, I'm glad it exists. Like, absolutely yeah. glad it exists. So,
exactly. Yeah.
Hopefully more people will see it.
Exactly. I'm absolutely happy that like, you know, Gosling went, you know what? I don't want to do anything that you guys want to do. What I really want to do is The Fall Guy. I want to make a movie about stunt guys because I grew up around these guys, and they're kind of the best awesome guys. Like, they're like the dudes that I look up to. And it's kind of funny because all the good movie stars seem to have said the same thing about their stunt doubles. Like Keanu and Chad Seleski, who, like, you know, I don't know if anybody knows this, but Lidditch and Seleski made the John Wick movie, the first one together. Yeah. And then they separated and they started doing their own things. But Seleski stayed with the John Wick movies because he was Keanu Reeves's stunt double for the Matrix movies moving forward. So, but then when you think about that, it's like, and Keanu has said the same thing that Pitt said, which is, you know who I look up to? You know who the coolest dude in the world was Chad Seleski, because he could do everything that I couldn't do. And by all accounts, same thing. Cool as a cucumber, that dude. I just, like, it's the thing that I've always felt since I saw, like, when my dad, like, when I was, like, 10 years old and my dad showed me Hooper, which was, man, those dudes are badasses. Like, those dudes are the real badasses. Like, and it's true. They are. I mean, because, like, you know, like you said, like, having to do a stunt 7 times, 10 times, 20 times, being set on fire. Who the fuck does that? The coolest dudes on a movie set, the stunt guy.
We're going to roll a car 8.5 times. Like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Like, just to see if we can do it and set a world record, you know? And they did. So, like, when she calls it out on the in the movie when he rolls the car and she's like, that's a world record. That was the world record.
Like, it was.
That, yeah. Like, they said it. Like, yeah, filming the movie. So, like, that's incredible.
The fall. So. The fall that he does. The fall that his stunt double does at the end of the movie in the helicopter.
Yeah.
That set a record, too.
So.
like an extended free fall without safety. Without, like, he did that. The stunt guy did that without, like, my biggest thing for right now is I want a 3-hour making of documentary where they just let the stunt doubles talk about the shit, like, basically give me the Fall Guy movie making of the Fall Guy. Like, I want the real documentary, right? Because, like, some of these stunts, like, they're purposely fantastic. Like, they're meant to show off, they're meant to be showy shit. Like when he does the jump, which is also like a kind of a reference to Hooper, when they do the when they do the big 250-foot jump, which is also another record. And, like, just how they accomplish that shit, right? it's a movie that I feel like just is going to be a return on investment. The more you watch it, the more you're going to love it. Yeah. And it's kind of like these, it's these sort of things where they get so metatextual, but it absolutely works because it all goes back to, like, realism from the perspective of being on a set. Like, I feel like this is one of the first movies, other than a couple precious few, that feel like when you're on the set, it feels like how a real Hollywood set works. Not some kind of pretend notion of it. And I love that kind of thing. I love getting insight into, like, the Howard Hawks of it all. Like, give me the behind the scenes. Give me workers that are, like, you know, give me people, crafts and artisans that are at the most elite level, and they're just kind of walking with the swagger that you know that they're elite. And that's what this movie is. Like, it literally feels like that, and I just kind of love that. I love everything about it, but I especially love the fact that they cared about the world that they were creating. And so often or not, with these Hollywood things, they don't want to do it because I feel like they don't want to peek. They don't want you to peek behind the curtain to see how it's truly like. Yep. So like everybody is like, oh yeah, realism, realism, realism.
Yeah. Yeah. Go, if you get a chance to go see it, go see it. If it hits VOD in 2 weeks, it's worth the immediate buy, rental, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I know like super packed DVDs and Blu-rays are not really a thing anymore, but I'm with you. Like a fucking like jam packed Blu-ray with all kinds of behind the scenes shit on this movie, like fucking multiple commentary tracks with the stunt performers, like all of that would be so much fun, like so much fun. So I mean, we'll see what we get. We'll see if anything else comes of this, but yeah, it's even with my problems with the movie, it's an absolute blast, just an absolute blast. And yeah, I don't know that we're going to have a lot of that this summer. Hopefully Deadpool and Wolverine, but like, you know, with what's coming, like a lot of it might be great, but like, I don't feel like a lot of it's going to be like, oh, just like sit down and have a good time, you know? So, mm-hmm.
No, I mean, like if you look at the things that are being released, I mean, it's like A Quiet Place Day One, Inside Out 2.
Yeah.
Like
again,
like, I know that
might be great stuff. Not going to be like going to be real, like stressful, emotional shit.
Exactly. So I'm like, maybe not so much fun like we had last year. You know, but last year was really special. Like, I'm not going to like, I'm still going to say like, you know, when in 10 years, when we look back on 2023, we're going to look back on it and go, wow, that was a fucking summer.
Yeah.
Not just for the Barbie and Oppenheimer of it all, but I mean, we talked about it. We talked through it. Yeah. Just how many great movies there were. And they were great. Like, it wasn't like they were bum movies. So yeah, we will see. Because, you know, let's see how entertaining this year is going to be. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're going to be here for it. And we'll be here next week and maybe talking. I don't even know what comes out next week. I mean, I know, like.
Yeah, we'll talk about next week off air because I have some shit going on.
So, oh, yeah, that's true. Okay.
Go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com. Mostly it's just this podcast right now, but hopefully this week some Star Wars stuff coming up, and the return of Orphan Black coming very, very soon. So I've seen most of the season, we could talk about that some other time. And then you can check out my writing over at Adam's website.
Yes. We have the last, the last of the triptych was posted last week for Logan's Moving Pictures.
The Iron Giant, the coming soon.
Oh, man. I haven't watched that movie in a decade and a half, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to watch it because it just makes me cry like a blithering idiot. But you have three. Last week was Empire. And then you have
Back to the Future Part 2,
and then Ball Junkies, which like I don't know which is my favorite. Like you write so eloquently about like all three of them. Like it's a really great like triptych of entries, two of which kind of relate to one another with like the sequelist nature of each of those, but like they all kind of come from that like great place of heart and memory and stuff. And I cannot, like, we're getting close to 50, which, like, you know, the next one is 47, so like we're down to the final five, right?
Yeah.
So 48 49 50 no the final four until we hit that beautiful number, and then we will kind of talk more about what your plans are post 50, which I'm very excited about. But yeah, read Logan's stuff and then my postings and musings on home video releases and a few other things. We've got a lot of content on the site, movieisle.com. Isle with an I, not an A. And yeah, there'll be more stuff on there. And then we will talk more about the summer movies as we're in summer movie season in the coming weeks. And with that, guys, talk to you soon.
Yep, we'll see you guys hopefully next week, but definitely soon. Number 8 Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s back before they all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.